Mr. McNally?
Here.
Mrs. Farah?
Here.
Mr. Sproul?
Here.
Okay, next we'll do the pledge to the flag, but before we do that, it is Veterans Day, as everyone's aware, and if we could just take a moment of silence to honor those who have served. Okay, would you join me in the pledge to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, do we have citizen comments?
There are none, Mr. Sproul.
There are none, okay. That takes us to our superintendent's report.
Well, that was Dr. quick, Shulman. We have a few things this evening, but we want to start, I think, with our Redlink staff and Mr. Morrell's here to introduce some individuals that he'd like to highlight this evening, some students and so tomorrow.
Hello, good evening.
There we go. Good evening. Welcome to Redlink Middle School. I have a small, looks like a herd of kids over here. The first thing I want to do is I want to recognize our wonderful orchestra performers from this morning, or from when you came in. We've got Stella and Trudy and Story and Amelia. Aren't they fantastic? Moms and dads, if you're here, wave, wave. Orchestra moms and dads, where are you? Thank you. As you know, today is Veterans Day, and we did many, many powerful things here today at Redlink. I wanted to share a couple of those. First of all, we had Mr. Redlink here at about noon today, and he was greeted by a group of about 15 of our students. Went well. We also, this afternoon, we sent a group of 8th grade kids to many, many of the retirement homes. And they met with veterans in the community. We reached out to veterans. And in fact, just about 10 minutes ago, I got a very moving email. Mr. Morrell, I wanted to take a moment to thank you. I need you to know that one of your children, one of your students, met with my dad, who's a veteran at Rosebud this afternoon, and it was very moving. So this mom already took the effort to talk with us. So we got out and about in the community to recognize Veterans Day. In addition, our kids participated in a Patriots Pen contest. It's promoted by the VFW. And at Redlink, we had over 225 kids were a part of the Patriots Pen. And we are fortunate to have two of those kids today as 8th graders. They're going to share their Patriot Pen essays that they've written. Joanna is the first one. Joanna is an 8th grader. And Joanna has agreed to share her Patriots Pen essay with us today.
So, what does patriotism mean to me? Patriotism is the core of a nation. The dictionary describes it as love and devotion to one's country. But I think patriotism is that and so much more. It's not described quite the same for every person. Each and every one of us experiences patriotism in our own unique way. It can start at the simple utter of a word and then spread rapidly like a raging wildfire. Citizens of all likes of the United States join together in jubilant cheers to show their pride and honor in their country. Patriotism to me is about being an exemplary citizen, being sacrificial, and expressing patriotism through my actions and words. Patriotism is about being an exemplary citizen. To honor one's country, one must be honorable themselves. We want to be considered an honorable nation, but the country can't do it all by itself. We want to be considered an even the simplest thing, like sitting next to someone new or helping someone pick up the materials that they dropped, is an example of being a good citizen. Certain qualities, such as leadership, kindness, and honesty, make up a good citizen. Patriotism is about self-sacrifice. It can be as simple as going out of your comfort zone to aid someone, or as huge as serving in the military. People sacrifice their own lives to protect their country. They do it out of pure love and dedication to our nation. Some people wouldn't want to be doing anything else other than serving their country, and sacrificing their time for doing something that they enjoy and feel good about. Patriotism is about the way we use our actions and words to better our communities and nation. Actions such as volunteering at a nursing home or contributing to a food bank will help improve your community. Using words to stand up for what you believe in can better our nation as a whole. Practicing ethical behaviors and habits will bring integrity, morality, and virtue to our country. Patriotism comes in many different styles and extremes. The person who celebrates the nation's holidays is just as patriotic as the person who serves our country. We all have patriotism in us, whether it's shown passionately and proudly, like a roaring fire, or shown humbly, like a tiny spark. Even the smallest spark can ignite a fire. Sooner or later, patriotism becomes an inferno for everyone to be consumed by in all its glory.
Nice job, Joanna. We also have with us... Yes.
You told us her first name, but how could you tell us her last name?
Joanna Osborne, eighth grader out of Mrs. Russell's class. We also now have Natalie West, who's also an eighth grader as a part of Mrs. Russell's class. Natalie.
Patriotism is a passion that unites us all. Patriotism is a common denominator in all walks of life. Patriotism is non-prejudiced. It can be found in the young, old, rich, or poor. On the night of April 18, 1775, Paul Revere risked his life when he rode into Boston to warn the people about the coming of the British. Paul Revere put his life at stake for others. Paul Revere went by instinct, no matter what the outcome would be. This shows that Paul Revere had courage. One way patriotism is shown is by standing up for your rights and freedoms. "Give me liberty or give me death" was a famous quote that was shared to us in 1775 by Patrick Henry. He made the speech because of his need for freedom. Patriotism is brought out has brought out this in Patrick Henry. What was going through Francis Scott's mind as he wrote the lyrics to this country's national anthem? What influenced him to write such strong words? At school every morning at 8:20, our school recites the Pledge of Allegiance. Why do we recite it every morning? Is there a meaning behind it? Showing spirit is another form of patriotism. It appears to me that patriotism shines its brightest when the country is at its darkest. During the first month after 9/11, the people of America showed their spirit by hanging flags outside of their houses. They also played patriotic songs on the radio. During the hard times, America was more united than it had ever been. But why only then? Why does it take a tragic event to unite the country? Just because the 21st century may be more technological does not mean that patriotism will differ. Patriotism can and will be brought out by all. From Paul Revere to 9/11 to today, the one thing that will endure is patriotism.
Again, that's Natalie West, an eighth grader. And again, those are two essays, an example of over 200 essays that were submitted by Redling. So that's our Veterans Day piece. Now, I would also like to shift gears to our foreign language. We all know that this year, new to the middle school, was the introduction to world languages here. So we have two brief skits that you're going to hear. We've got a sixth grade Spanish group. They are part of Miss Parikh's class and part of Mrs. Morales' class. And I have four sixth graders. I've got Jackson Bonilla, I've got Zach Song, I've got Antonio Perez, and Jacob Polinski. One thing I also want to point out is these sixth grade kids, this is their first go around with foreign language. So they didn't have any foreign language exposure at the elementary school level.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
¿Cómo están?
Estoy bien, gracias.
Estoy bien. Estoy regular.
¿Cómo se llaman?
Me llamo Usain Bolt.
Me llamo Babe Ruth.
Me llamo
Soy Jacobo. D. ¿De dónde son?
Soy de Jamaica.
Soy de Nueva York.
Soy de Nueva York.
Soy de St. Charles. ¿Cómo son?
Soy alto, activo, atlético, moreno y trabajador.
Soy alto, activo, atlético y trabajador.
Soy moreno, cómico y simpático. ¿Y tú?
Soy bajo, activo, atlético, guapo y moreno. And then, ¿cuántos años tienes?
Tengo 29 años.
Tengo 30 años.
Tengo 47 años.
Muy bien, mucho gusto.
Igualmente.
Nos vemos. Adiós.
Well, actually, I had a question about the two essays we heard earlier.
Yes, sir.
Did all of the eighth graders do essays, or was that just an optional?
Yes, all the eighth graders were asked to do an essay, but it was optional if they wanted to not donate, but contribute the essay to be included in the activity.
Okay, and to the boys, fantastic. That's really good.
We also have Mrs. Bratzel, and we have two French class representatives, and they have a French skit that they're going to perform for us. We have Emily and Emily. We have Emily Eicher, and we have Emily Julian.
Salut, Emily.
Bonjour.
Comment ça va?
Pas mal. Et toi?
Ça va. Tu as quel cours le matin?
J'ai français, histoire, géographie, anglais et choral. Tu as quoi l'après-midi?
J'ai algèbre, biologie et EPS.
Moi non. J'ai géométrie, physique et EPS.
Tu as géométrie? Bon courage.
Tu n'aimes pas la géométrie?
Non. C'est nul, difficile et zéro.
Moi aussi. C'est super intéressant.
Au revoir.
À tout à l'heure, Emily.
Any questions from the board?
Très bien.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci.
I would just, I was beginning to think that Spanish was, you know, more useful in the U.S. and everything. And recently I was in Europe and I found that, except in Spain, there's nobody speaking Spanish, and French is so useful. So I think it's really, you know, a good decision on your part, and it could be really helpful to you.
Merci.
And I do want to reiterate that these kids have been speaking a foreign language for about 11 weeks. So that's pretty impressive there. Kudos goes out to our world language group here. Raise your hand, ladies, if you're teaching world language at Redling. Lots of them showed up here. And that's a brand new group of people here. One of those people was a Redling teacher a year ago, not teaching Spanish. So it's a brand new department that we've gotten this far with. Also, Mrs. Russell kind of spearheaded our Patriots Pen activity at the building level to encourage our kids to really write for purpose. And she spearheaded that, and that's why we had so many essays, people participating. And it was a powerful day today with a lot of genuine, authentic interactions with our community's veterans. So welcome to Redling. Hope you have a great evening.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Veterans as well. Let's prepare. parents, collect your kids. And Mom and Dad, thanks for coming. Appreciate it very much. I want to recognize, I think we got some Norris students sitting here. Do we have some Norris students doing your... thanks for coming, gentlemen, getting your all your requirements through and everything else. Great. Thank you very much. Next, we want to recognize one of our own. Gus Silva is here tonight. He's a Richmond PA teacher, and he's this year's winner of the Illinois Young Professional Physical Education Teacher of the Year by the Illinois Association of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. This recognition is in honor of Mr. Silva's high professional standards, his promotion of physical health and well-being, and his dedication to teaching and the service to professionals. This award will also allow him to be considered as the Midwest Dairy Young Professional of the Year. If you haven't gone to Gus's program in the morning, how often do you do it? Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 3 days a week in the morning. How many kids you got coming?
We have about 240 kids.
Okay, so 100, ladies and gentlemen, now think about this. 100 kids come before school starts to get sweaty with Mr. Silva. And they do a great job, and he does a great job of not only teaching physical education, but a lot of things as well about life. And so we really appreciate and want to honor Gus for his efforts on behalf of the kids of St. Charles. Thank you so much. Do you want to say anything about your program and what you do, and tell the board members what you do?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say thank you. Thank you to the board for recognizing this award. I'm honored to receive the award on behalf of the students at Richmond who motivate me every single day to get up and be there for them those mornings and every morning. For the wonderful staff at Richmond, my colleagues are also my teachers, and without their support, our programs, our PE program, our Precision Fitness Club, our 100-mile walking club, none of that would be possible without the support. And then, of course, my principal, Rosa Shia, who is very tolerant, and she's a risk taker because she always empowers me to do these things, you know, for kids. And, you know, the kids always respond. You know, the question was brought up when I first wanted to start the Precision Fitness Club, you know, are 8, 9, and 10-year-olds going to get up extra early for school and show up? And they've done that. In 3 years, we've seen the program grow from 60 students to about 150 last year and to over 250 this year. And then we have another 250 that are signed up for our walking and running club that takes place during recess. Our PE program, I think, is special. We want to make it the best PE program. Physical education at our school is more than just something that happens for 30 minutes a day. It's embedded in everything that the students do. It's all education, and we try to be as physical as we can. So it happens in the morning, it happens during recess, it happens during the school day, and it certainly happens in physical education class. So I'm just really proud of our program. This award isn't about me, it's really about the program. I look at it as an award for Richmond Intermediate Physical Education, which is not just the PE teachers, but all of our teachers. So just thank you so much.
Thank you.
And then no meeting would be complete without recognizing that November 15th is School Board Member Appreciation Day. Yeah, it's a another hallmark event, you know, just so you know. So we want to thank board members, and in honor of that, after we're done with the board meeting before executive session, everyone's invited to cake, which we have for the board members as well. So thank you for Board Member Appreciation Day. And I believe that completes the superintendent's report.
Okay, thank you for that. And great job for everybody who, between the students, Mr. Silva and everyone, thank you very much. That takes us to committee reports. Nick, I don't want to put you on the spot, but Mr. Gaffney's not here. Did the business services meet?
We did.
You want me to give you a minute and come back?
No, I can kind of go through. I'll try to remember it because most of it's on for action or consent.
Yeah.
We went over the kind of the timeline for the truth and taxation law and the process of what we're going to be taking. And then We went through, Mr. Baird brought to us about two facility vehicles, and then for action, and then also on action is a dual lawnmower, snow blower, or snow remover, which I guess can't come soon enough now that we've got snow. And then, let's see, we heard, what else do we have? Seth presented the fiscal year budget for us, and then Mr. Baird also brought us the intergovernmental license to share the salt dome with the city.
Okay, great, thank you. Ms. Pirot, do we have community relations?
Community relations met on, we had a special meeting on October 5th, and that is on the consent agenda. No, it's not.
Correct.
For board agreements. And we'll be meeting again on November 25th. And on that agenda will be the student liaison and to open up a discussion about board members adopting a school program or adopting a school to attend. So those will be two that I'm aware of.
Okay.
What was the date on that one?
That is Monday, November 25th.
On Monday after Thanksgiving?
Before.
That's okay.
Before.
Okay. Learning and teaching?
Did not meet, but we'll be meeting a week from tomorrow.
Okay. Perfect. Anything in DPTO?
Yes. DPTO met, and thanks to you, to Mr. Blaney, for refreshing my memory on this one. After last month's meeting where we saw the district report card or scorecard, the parents, the DPTO reps wanted to realize that it's not about scores. They wanted to know about college readiness. So they invited in Gene Cable and John Peters, who are two of the assistant principals at East and North, who are in charge of, are we okay? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Invited Gene Cable, who's the assistant principal at East, and John Peters, who's the assistant principal at North, to talk about what happens in their departments, and to talk about it basically in turn, to talk about the change in their job position. There used to be three assistant principals, now there are four, and it's caused a shifting responsibilities, and whether responsibilities is with the guidance counselors, and they talked about college readiness and what their department does. And then they had many questions from Dr. Schlumman was there to answer all these the questions from the participants who are always provide lively conversation. So that was our meeting.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to skip over housing.
The Housing Commission is going to be meeting in conjunction with Homes for a Changing Region. That's that public workshop that has been in the news, in the newspaper, and again, it's going to be on November 20th at 6:30 to 8:30. It's a drop-in, and it'll be at the Council Chambers of the City of St. Charles. And what this is going to be a public workshop on how local housing needs will change within the next 30 years. And you'll learn there about the different types of housing that are in St. Charles currently and where the expected growth areas will be occurring. So it should be actually really interesting to go to, and there'll be interactive maps that you'll be able to play with, design your own city.
What was that date?
November 20th, 6:30 to 8:30.
Okay. Thank you. And how about policy? Okay, did I cover everyone?
Norris.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. We just had two things. We had a for action, which was the bills and treasurer's report, and then Mr. Monkton provided the for information, the first quarter report for us.
Okay. All right, and I think that covers the committee, so that brings us to for action. Item A, do I have a motion for the 2013 Truth and Taxation Law, Tax Law Resolution, and resolution stating intent to abate 2013 debt service, bond and interest tax levies?
So moved.
Kim Seale, second, Mr. Mannheim. questions, comments? Did you have some comments you wanted to make? Just kind of give us a quick recap on what's going on.
Absolutely. If it's okay, I will go ahead and present a very quick presentation about the levy.
Sure.
It's not Spanish, it's not French, but it's its own language of school finance.
International language.
International language, that's right. Just a real quick refresher, a little over three-quarters of our revenue is derived from our tax levy process, as you're aware. Lots of different laws and rules that impact that are listed there on the screen. A lot of key inputs in that. And then this also determines what we're able to levy in each individual fund. Where we're at in the process at the Business Services Committee meeting on the 29th, we did go over the same presentation. Today is where we do the estimated aggregate levy and as well are combining that with a commitment for an abatement, which we'll get to in a moment. We're publishing the tax notice via our website on November 29th. We're not required to do that, but the Business Services Committee felt like it was the right thing to do, so we will be doing that pending your approval. Holding a public hearing in conjunction with our board meeting on December 9th, and then we would file that levy on the 17th, which is a little bit before the last Tuesday in December, which happens to fall on New Year's Eve Day, so we don't want to wait too long to get that in on the 17th. Just a real quick comparison to last year, this year's levy very consistent with the plan that was outlined last year, keeping to the plan of a maximum of 2.5%. We're still below our property tax extension limits on all of our funds, and again, with a commitment to abate anything that exceeds 2.5% to local taxpayers. New construction, this is obviously an aid to local taxpayers. When we have a lot of new construction, as you can see on the screen, there's been a lot of change in that over the last few years, and it's been pretty stagnant. We're estimating $12 million in this levy, but we're actually putting that a little bit up just as we did last year, $20 million just in case. We would never want to leave that on the table. What we know is we know the CPI. That's the most critical piece at 1.7. We're projecting out our growth, growth in quotes, because we're actually seeing another decline a little bit better than last year at 5.79. Our new construction, again, at $20 million. The key is that these are in line with our PMA projections, our five-year projections, and again with our debt, our schedule a little bit over $22 million, but we will be abating anything above the 2.5%. And that brings our cumulative abatement for the last year, which is a little over $2.5 million, to well over $4 million. Again, the continuation of the plan, a commitment to abate the debt services levy tonight with the official abatement resolution to be done in spring that is required to be done in March. We'll do that at the March board meeting, and then EAV and new construction will continue to be monitored. Any questions?
Questions from board members? Comments? Is this something we started doing last year?
Yes.
I would like to commend Dr. Shulman and his team for working on how and a method to have an abatement given to taxpayers. As I've been reading in the paper, I've been seeing increases right along for property tax increase for schools, and necessary, of course. But here we are under market in reality, abating and giving money back to our taxpayers, and that is truly to be commended. Well, Stuart, well done.
Good. I agree. Anything else? Okay, would you call the roll, please?
Mrs. Yule.
Yes.
Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mrs. McConnell.
Yes.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mrs. Perot.
Yes.
Mr. Spring.
Yes. Motion is approved. That brings us to item B, the Board of Education agreements. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Okay. Mrs. Huell, second.
Second.
Mrs. McConnell. Questions, comments? Okay. Seeing none, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mrs. McConnell?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
No.
Mrs. Perot?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes.
Mr. Sterling?
Yes. Motion is approved. In item C, do I have a motion to for the purchase of two facilities vehicles from state contract?
So moved.
Mr. Manheim, second. Ms. Perot? Questions, comments? Okay, seeing none, call the roll.
Mrs. McConnell? Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mrs. Perot?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. Spring?
Yes. Motion is approved. And do I have a motion for item D, the purchase of one dual lawnmower and snow remover? Mr. Manheim, do I have a second? Okay, questions?
I think Mr. Manheim wants to drive it.
Actually, how quickly will it get here?
Yeah, can we take delivery tomorrow? Would you call the roll, please?
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mrs. Crowe.
Yes.
Mrs. Hewell?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mrs. McConnell?
Yes.
Mr. Sperling?
Yes. Motion is approved. And then item E. Do I have a motion to approve a resolution providing for the issue of general obligation refunding school bonds, series 2014 of the school district for the purpose of refunding certain outstanding bonds of said district and providing for the levy of a direct annual tax sufficient to pay the principal and interest on said bonds? Okay, Mr. Gerard, do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Manheim, can you have some comments?
Yes, please. I've worked very closely with Mr. Bob Lewis from PMA, who's here tonight, also in case there are any questions. I've got a couple of slides that are just going to supplement what's in your packet. This has been a very active process. As you recall, at the September board meeting, we presented an opportunity from Bank of America that did not quite meet our terms, so we passed on that particular deal. And lo and behold, there was another opportunity that's come up that the Business Services Committee heard with Chase. It's a very attractive deal. However, the market changed very quickly between then and now, so that's why we're talking about what you're seeing on their slide right now. This is a five-year municipality graph, but it's only covering 3 years, trend line, excuse me, but it's covering 3 years. The top line, the blue line, represents the deal that Bank of America had presented us back in September. The green line represents the deal that Chase is currently offering us, and the purple line represents a hypothetical deal if we were to go to market today. It's an approximate. We don't know for sure, but that's a baseline. And so the red arrow really indicates kind of that gap, which indicates the market risk between now and when those bonds are callable on December 1st, 2014. We are a AA-plus rated organization, which, of course, has helped make this deal possible. This next chart outlines the different costs of each, or savings of each, excuse me, proposal. You can see in the middle there's a Chase proposal, and if we decide to go ahead and pass the resolution tonight, this is what we'd achieve. About a $3.6 million savings over the term. If we decided to wait, which we could also do, we would then want to just go ahead and wait and see how the market plays out and see what those would be callable. There's no guarantee. We know in looking back at history that we've seen fluctuations even over this past year anywhere between half to a full percent within a six-month range. So it could go up, could go down. We don't know. So really the decision tonight is one, to adopt the resolution, to lock in the savings, or to hold off and see where the market plays out.
So what is the risk if we waited the year to next number?
What is the risk?
If we took no action tonight.
If we took no action, that we could see the hypothetical example up there and pick up another $500,000, or we could see no savings, we could see no change, we could see a loss in savings. It's really, we don't know what the market's going to do. That's really the risk that's at hand here.
So no change from the 3.6. It could be as high as 4.2, could be 3.6. What would be?
Could be lower.
And what would lend that as a possibility?
I'm going to let Mr. Lewis go off of his historical knowledge. I mean, I can give my opinion, but since he's here, I might as well let him address that question directly since he's living it every day.
I think your question is trying to analyze the probability of that occurring. And the way we kind of look at this analysis is, well, how much would rates have to go up on that from now to December of next year so that hypothetical current market deal becomes the deal that you're locking in? And that, we estimate, is between 0.35 to 0.4% is what rates would have to go up, and then that hypothetical deal would come down to the $3.6 million. If rates go up more than 0.35 to 0.4%, your savings fall below the $3.6 million. And it's the break-even analysis. Now, where it will be when you get to that point in time, nobody can predict that. Seth and I looked over the We looked over the five-year rate on the municipal bond index just over the last year, and you can see fluctuations within a period of time where it can go up. Would it go up like? We looked over a three-month period, and it would cycle around 50 basis points. So that's part of the problem is you could say, well, I'm going to wait. But let's say you sell on November 1st and rates are decent on that day and you could get something higher. But what if you had waited till November 15th and rates were even higher at that time? So you get so it's not only waiting for the 12 months, but it's also trying to get to that right date that you might lock them in on during that time, which nobody can predict that. So this is just a way for you, just like as you as an individual, if you own certain stocks and you've achieved gains on those stocks, you can adopt certain hedges or buy certain hedges or sell or buy that stock at a certain point in time to lock in your gains. So it's kind of an opportunity to lock in your gain that you have on this bond issue, or you can continue to ride the market and wait another year and see what you get then.
So it does the bond rates, the bond rates that you're talking about does have to do with the quantitative easing and what the Fed does, right?
Exactly.
And they have kind of forecast what they think they're going to do.
Yeah, and that's what happened. That break even, when we first presented this to the Financial Services Committee, I want to say back in July or August, instead of being 0.35 to 0.4, it was only 0.15.
Take that.
At that point in time. But that was actually a worse deal. We were looking at the Bank of America proposal. And what has happened is that fear of tapering subsided a little bit, the thing you're referring to. And that caused municipal rates to improve some, which is what widened the break even. But it's fully anticipated that they may start that tapering again, maybe as early as December, but more likely March, which is still several months in advance of when you decide to lock or you could do this bond issue.
I have one other question. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chapman, one of the reasons that we went from Bank of America to Chase was because of also the conditions that the board had. So those conditions, how do they fit into the overall picture?
Yeah, the conditions of this deal are better. Some of the provisions in the Bank of America deal are no longer there in terms of, I think there was a provision in there, correct me if I'm wrong, where if our bond rating was adjusted, then we had to adjust for the rate.
Like taxation.
Correct. There is still a tax component to this deal where if all of a sudden we were unable to do a taxable deal, then we would end up getting the taxable rate. But that risk exists currently. That still exists even up with our bonds that would be callable if we decline this deal.
So right now we have this what's favorable to us, but let's say 6 months things change. We don't know that we can get that condition that we have now.
No, correct me if I'm wrong. We can get that now. That's part.
We can get it now. Let's say things are changed. In 6 months we reassess. We don't know if we can still.
Where we would be, Seth and I've talked about this. I think where we're at is we're either going to do this deal or we're going to wait till December 14th.
Oh, okay.
I mean, because otherwise it's, we're cycling all the time on this thing. So it just, I think we either, which is when the bonds are really callable. Mm-hmm. So.
Some of the other risks that you have, which it was really hard to quantify, is there's something that we all deal with as local issuers, all of us, is that you're located in the state of Illinois, which means your bonds sell at a bit of a premium to other, compared to other states.
About 50 basis points.
Right. Okay. And my concern is, it looks like the state still hasn't done anything about pensions. You get towards the end of next year, you have a governor's election, General Assembly is being reelected, and you have an income tax expiring, that premium could widen with all the uncertainty of what's going to happen come January 1st of 2015. And so you eliminate that risk as well. There's nothing in the terms of the deal that the state of Illinois continues to deteriorate and not deal with their pension crisis. The rate can adjust or the deal can go away. There's nothing in there. So by locking it in, you eliminate any more risk with the state of Illinois.
We all can imagine what we think that will be.
But to some extent, I think that Chase has put that factor in there as well, because that's why their rate that they're offering is not our current rate.
Right. Yeah, they have factored that into some degree, but my concern is it could get worse
because
of all the uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And what Seth was talking about the taxability when you compare Bank of America and Chase is up to the closing date, December 1st of 2014, you retain the risk that tax law could change. Which you you retain that risk if you do nothing today either. You know, if you wait to sell until December of next year, if tax law were to change and you can't sell tax-exempt bonds anymore, well, then you have to sell taxable bonds in the public market. So your hypothetical deal changes. The difference between Bank of America and Chase's proposals after December 1st of 2014, if tax law changes, that impacts Chase, doesn't impact you. On the Bank of America proposal, they would adjust your rate if the tax law changed. So you're eliminating your tax law risk after December 1st of 14.
With the
Chase proposal.
With the Chase proposal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Does this one have a kind of a quick fire date thing? Like, not quick fire, but whereas Mr. Sperling would have to be ready.
No, you're doing it right now. This is
okay.
Not an authorization of the president. This is a, you're mm-hmm. doing the deal tonight. Mm-hmm.
I would just add, I mean, there's not a wrong decision to be made. I think we looked at this back in September. We felt pretty good about that deal. This is a better deal. However, the market's widened. So there's no right or wrong answer. It's really up to the board to decide if we want to lock it and be done or let it play out.
And I just want to check, because you and I didn't check, but that net, that $4.2 million is net, right?
Net of all fees.
Okay.
And that does include additional fees that this Chase proposal does not. So there's no underwriting and things of that nature in the Chase deal. If we wait and it's callable, there's an additional $275,000 fees. But to Dr. Shulman's point, that's in the number.
Not an easy decision to make.
No, it's just
now we're sitting there. What are we going to make a recommendation? So
but it's a great problem to have.
Actually, did you make a recommendation? I didn't notice.
We made a recommendation, I think, to go ahead with the Chase proposal, but we also knew that it's not a slam dunk recommendation, that you mm-hmm. may choose to wait.
Yeah, that break even rate that I was referring to, 0.35 to 0.4, a week ago we thought that was about 0.5. What happened on Friday, though, is there was a very good job report. 10-year Treasury went up quite a bit, which caused municipal bond rates to come up a lot, which impacted the hypothetical deal. But Chase actually lowered their rate 2 basis points. So that narrowed the break-even change just on that, you know, towards the end of last week. So it just shows how quickly this, you know, it's basically a relative value analysis, how quickly that can change.
So just to make sure we're clear, so the Chase proposal is for the 3.6 million, 3.6 and change. With the current market rates, could be looking at 4.2 on a bright picture.
Right, that would be today's
correct.
Rate.
It would be today, which will change tomorrow, which will change the day after.
Or a year from now, our savings could be less than the 3.6.
That's right.
It could be more than a 4.2. It could be less than the 3.6.
Thoughts, comments, mm-hmm. questions?
We're entrusted with this money, and being entrusted with other people's money, I have a tendency to be very conservative with it because it does not belong to me, and I cannot risk somebody else's money that I'm in charge to steward. So knowing I've got a bird in the hand, and I don't know how many birds or savings are out there. And yes, I would agree with your analysis of Illinois finances. I would suggest we go with Chase. That's how I would vote.
You would suggest we do that?
Chase.
Okay. I would weigh in that I feel similarly, and similarly in trying to represent the community, that I think our community is one that has maybe a more conservative fiscal approach to things. And it would feel that it was well served, or we had served them well, to do what they probably would do in their own home. Not everybody, but I'm looking at our community, and that's what I think. So I'll vote for yes for that proposal.
Okay. I agree with both that sentiment as well. I think that we probably need, rather than going back and forth on this, I think we should move with it.
Because really, I guess the last comment would be it would be almost impossible for it to cost us money. We're just talking about the amount the savings will be.
Yeah, that's correct. This is savings, and in fact, it's a greater savings than we talked about in September. So
right.
it's It's a good thing.
It doesn't change the expiration date of when these bonds are expiring, which is 2017-18, something like that. I don't remember exactly the date. So it doesn't change those dates as to when they're expiring. It does change. I'm trying to remember what the current rate on those bonds are.
It's 5%. Right? Average.
5%, yeah. So their average around 5%. So pretty much you wait, you're going to get savings, but it's a matter of how much savings.
Okay. Any further questions?
I was just going to just say one other point is I just want to, however this vote goes, I want to thank Dr. Schulman for investigating it, going through months of evaluation and bringing it to us. And I also want to congratulate or thank him, regardless of how it goes, and the board and the administration, because it's because of the fact that we have a AA+, I guess that's our rating. It's a very substantial rating in a tough time, and that's why we're able to do this. And I think we and former boards should feel that we've done a good job.
Okay. Anything else? Would you call the roll?
Mrs. Prague.
Yes.
Mrs. Hewitt.
Yes.
Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mrs. McConnell.
Yes.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mr. Stone.
Yes. Motion is approved. And that takes us to the consent agenda. Are there any items that you wish to have removed? Okay. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda? Ms. McConnell, second.
Second.
Mr. Manheim. Questions, comments? Would you call the roll, please?
Mrs. Hewitt.
Yes.
Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mrs. McConnell.
Yes.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mrs. Perot.
Yes.
Mr. Sperling.
Yes. And that is approved. And it takes us freedom of information request. Were there any comments you wanted to make? Or?
If you don't make any, I'll make some.
Well, Mr. Sperling asked me to look at it. There were 5 FOIA requests this last month by 4 different requesters. Staff time was just under 30 hours were spent. We don't have, it depends on what attorneys were working on it, but about 37 hours of attorney fees on that were charged as well. So estimated attorney cost depends on what attorneys were working on it. Mm-hmm. But they're...
Give us a ballpark. What do you think?
They're about $250 an hour.
How much? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, how much?
About $200 an hour, mm-hmm. average, probably about $200 an hour average. So if that 30, that'd be... about $7,000 or so.
Yeah, $7,500.
Yeah, mm-hmm. $7,500, something like that.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I just asked Dr. Schulman to just give us a quick capsule of that each month. And last item for discussion, delegate assembly resolutions.
Yes.
What are we doing with those? Oh, just going through it.
Did everybody read all of this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did anybody else have the same idea with the ones in the back where it doesn't tell the status, it doesn't tell what's happening, it just talks.
Yeah.
But the front ones are more interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, you really only want to focus on the ones right. where it has the ISB.
And those are the only ones that have a vote. I don't really know.
Yeah. Why. So I guess the question would be, of those, was there anyone that disagreed with an ISB resolution or their recommendation? Yeah.
I do. I have a couple that I would like to note. One is the position statement number 10 on preschool programs. I oppose their stand on not funding, voting to fund preschool programs. I understand why, because of the finite amount of resources available, but 15% of an average income for a two-income family goes to pay in Illinois for early childhood education. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money out of a family's income. So I do support having publicly funded preschool programs for our children at as early age as possible. The other one that I oppose as well is the Prevailing Wage Act.
What number is that?
That is number 15.
Oh, yeah.
In this day and age where many of our
community members and other members are considered working poor. The last thing that I would want to do is to support a reduction in wages, which will definitely impact the well-being of our families. I cannot and will not support that.
Those are the only two for you?
Those are the two.
Anyone else? What number was the first one, 10?
10.
10. Preschool programs.
Just pull those two out separately.
Okay, so going back to the first one that was brought up, number two. So on all the rest, regardless of which ones, because we don't know which ones will actually be brought up or voted on, but if 10 is to be brought up, so Corrine disagrees with the resolution committee. Does anyone agree with the resolution committee? As do I.
Because they shouldn't mandate it then if they're not going to, you know, if they don't fund it, they shouldn't mandate that we have to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
It would have to be.
The more we keep them out, the better, I'd say.
It would have to be funded. That's what they're talking about. No, it would be funded.
It would be funded, but we'd be, it's basically... Ms. Schulman, maybe you can shed some light, but we need to include the preschooler in the average daily attendance to provide more dependable state aid funding for preschools and our preschool districts, public school districts. So it's basically just adding numbers so that we get more state aid. Right.
Correct.
Which, as our district, gets very little.
Yeah.
It would not impact us positively.
Right.
Personally, and that's just how I'm voting on this.
If my understanding of this is correct, it's counting attendance, and therefore by counting attendance, we do get state aid. And if we have parents who meet a minimum requirement, financial requirement, they would be funded.
Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot of the ifs and the ands of the question and what the state would do, which is probably my biggest reason for voting no. But additionally, for us to have to, you know, put all those facilities in and everything, which is totally outstrip anything we could conceivably get back from the state. It would be a real demand on our community. I like the idea that we ourselves can do what we want to do, but I don't want the state telling us.
Right. I don't even think the state should be mandating this to begin with.
Absolutely.
So
I agree.
I think it's ridiculous they're mandating this to begin with and then to turn around and say we're going to mandate it, we're not going to fund it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why decisions shouldn't be made a distance away from where their impact is.
I would agree.
To me, the best, and I will not argue anymore with this, but to me, one of the best things we can do for our children is to give them a good start, and all the documentation, all the data shows that the earlier you get your child into a positive early childhood education, the better that we're going to do and the less negative impact and draw that it will have on our communities, whether it be from crime. There's a higher data propensity for them to graduate from high school, to go on to have successful careers, to not take drugs, to be less of a draw on the community. Plus, verbal skills are enhanced, creative thinking is enhanced, academic skills are enhanced at a very early age.
Mrs. Broad, when I go home tonight, I'm going to look for the article I read today that tells about how Europe is saying that early education too early is detrimental, in fact, and listed any number of reasons why. So, you know, I mean, there's both sides of the issue.
And
I just read it today.
Yeah, and I don't even know that it's, I don't know anyone's opposed to preschool education. The question comes down to, do we want the state aid and all the strings that come with it, or do we want to control it locally, mm-hmm. as we do now?
Well, and if I can interject, right, I don't read these resolutions, but I just read it now. Most of this, it feels like a little bit to me, is about the state aid formula and the money that comes mm-hmm. with it, because quite frankly, for our district, as an example, an additional student gets us about $400. Costs us about, our average student cost is around $10,000. We get around $400 and some in state aid per student. So you can see that if they were a mandated early childhood program for all students, as an example, we would lose substantially in regards to kind of the, so either our taxpayers would have to pick up the difference, or we'd make have to make other program cuts in order to supply yeah. other that. So I think a lot of this is about the uncertainty that the state has right now about funding education in general, mm-hmm. and the worry that boards have about, not necessarily about early childhood, but about kind of taking money away from programs that are already benefiting kids as well. So.
I understand that, but philosophically, I have
okay,
to support
the I'm not going to get into philosophical. I'm just trying to get into the money. Right now, so.
Okay. Okay.
And
so
the other one was
the prevailing wage number 15?
Yeah,
page 17.
Page 17 in this. And they recommended not to adopt, and I agreed with it. And you're saying the opposite?
Well, they recommend do adopt, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The post-prevailing wage.
It's to repeal.
Recommending that they adopt the Prevailing Wage Act by the CCSD 90.
Yeah.
They object.
Yeah. So
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and in my mind, this doesn't come down to paying fair wages. We all want to see people make a fair and decent wage. The problem for me is all the other strings that comes with the Prevailing Wage Act. It's nowhere near just a matter of paying a level wage.
Right. No, it's that and benefits. When you negate a prevailing wage, you can allow a contractor to come in with cheaper labor who may not have the quality of work that a trained laborer would have, because there's no controls. There's no controls also to pay benefits.
And if I could interject a little bit on this one as well, I think if you look at the sponsoring district, I think it's O'Fallon, this has a lot to do with about the differences between suburban Chicago and the rest of the state, and kind of how that prevailing wage hits the rest of the state. Many of the smaller rural districts, there's people that are willing to do the work, you know, for less money, and they don't have the contractors to come in sometimes, that, you know, they have to bring them from somewhere else. So that's my supposition on this. I can't say that's for sure, but I'm looking a little bit about who the sponsoring mm-hmm. district is as well.
And if you go on to the Prevailing Wage website, you will see that each county has its own specific mm-hmm. prevailing wage depending upon what your labor is. For right. instance, here in Kane County, a laborer makes $37 an hour, average wage. That's their average wage for a laborer.
A laborer, just a unskilled laborer.
37?
No, it would be. Mm-hmm. I can't say it's unskilled. Mm-hmm. It's a laborer.
Just in general. Yeah. Well, I know we often get that list of everything from people that tile to people that mm-hmm. Lay cement.
Yeah. All right. Does anybody else disagree with the resolution committee recommendation?
I agree with
that. As do I. I'm not a Prevailing Wage Act fan. Okay. Any others? So everyone else is good with, if Ms. McConnell votes on what items do come up for vote, if she just votes with the committee recommendation.
Yeah, I'm trying to make sure that there wasn't anything that I disagreed with.
Okay.
I have just a thought or two. Just, you want to get there early so you can get a seat. It can be very crowded. Not early, but it can be pretty crowded.
Oh, yeah, gets,
so you can see what's going on. Yeah. And then I would just ask maybe that we never have, this is the most work we've ever done on it, and that's fantastic. And it would be great to get just a mini report when you're done, maybe at community relations or something, just yay or nay, or whether it was close or not, because oftentimes we, you know, they vote. I've done it myself, and you really don't ever get much of a feedback or hear much about it. So I'd love to hear more.
What's interesting to me, because I did read every one of those paragraphs till my eyes were crossed.
Mm.
I just thought, you know, they say things in here, but we never hear anything more about them. You know, we don't hear if they followed through, or, you know, they'll say that they're going to support a change in the law for blah, 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 or they're going to work with, you know, this is a, to do this. Okay, how do we ever know if they accomplished it or what the status is, where it is now, you know, if it's in the legislature?
You know, I don't know, but they have a report to membership that comes out at some time in the year where I think they address a lot of that, and I must admit not to having read
I haven't
that.
Poured through every word of it now.
Yeah. This is the most exciting part, sitting there with your paddle, really.
Okay, and just as long as we're on the subject, who all is going down to the conference? Myself, Ms. McConnell,
I am.
Both of you?
I was going to talk to Chris.
Okay. And Nick, you cannot, right?
Okay.
All right.
Please do it.
Is there any new business? Any members of new business?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Just a comment. On October 18th, I had the opportunity to visit both Davis and Richmond schools. And I have to say that I was so delighted and just so excited about what I saw. I accidentally showed up at Davis when I should have gone to Richmond. So I was there very early in the morning and saw all of the children gathering before the school started. And they were engaged in quiet, active play, just having just a very good time. And I quickly then went over to Richmond. And I know that there had been previous discussion about concerns about the iPads and use of language and math. So this is sort of my observations. The iPad was buried in the desk like a ruler or a calculator would be thrown at anybody else's desk. It was a tool. It was not overly used. The children were not like lying the computer and putting a special spot on the desk. It becomes part of their resources. I saw children reading. I saw children who were engaged in math who had three or four different languages, native languages, all engaged together solving problems in their head, not with a calculator, not with a paper, not with a pencil, but doing formulas in their head. I saw games being played in Spanish, Jeopardy in Spanish. And the children were just very enthusiastic about their language acquisition. The state of the school was neat, clean, warm. I saw teachers just engaged in their rooms in conversation, talking about learning. I had the opportunity to see the physical education program, and I saw some of the activity that was that they were doing. And matter of fact, the children were leading the physical education class in exercise. I saw special reading programs that they were having. They were in session for children who are having some problems with reading. And when I got out of there, I felt just happy. It was a really wonderful experience, and I was so proud of our teachers, of our principal, and of our school. So it was a good observation, and I was very excited to be there.
Okay. Yeah, I think Ms. Yule visited some of the schools. I visited a couple schools as well, so it's a good thing to do.
No, I didn't. I was there for Teacher Institute days, and that would be a great thing to pick up again, go to a school every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay. Any other new business? Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn to closed session for the purpose of appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body or legal counsel for the public body, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee of the public or against legal counsel for the public body to determine its validity, and also for litigation when an action against, affecting, or on behalf of the particular public body has been filed and is pending before a court or administrative tribunal, or when the public body finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the minutes of the closed meeting. Do I have a motion? So moved. You're not going to make me repeat it, I hope. Ms. McNally, second. Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Mrs. Yule?
Yes.
Mr. Manning?
Yes.
Mrs. McCown?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mrs. Pratt?
Yes.
Mr. Sperling?
Yes. Why don't we take a 10-minute recess, or 15-minute, and we'll have some cake. And please join us for cake, and then we'll go to close.